Okay, so today I'm going to talk about my recent work, which is about generalization of policy debye deformism. So to begin with, I would just say a few sentences about policy debye deformism. I mean, probably many people are already very familiar with it. So it's a formalism to describe like quantum state or subspace. So it starts with like defining a poly group. So on a single qubit, you can define a group generated by I, X, and Z, where X and Z are just poly matrices. And then on n qubit, you just consider a tensor product of these. I mean, you consider a tensor product of operators coming from this group. Then we define the poly stable states or code as the following. So consider someone gives you a set of operator from the poly group. And you would say a state is poly stabilized state, or you would say a subspace is poly stabilized codes if they're in the like plus one comma eigen space of all these operators. So this is like the definition for poly stabilizers. A very, very simple example is the following. So you consider three qubit. Then you consider these following three poly operators. And with some work, you can show that the state that's stabilized by these operators are 0, 0, 0 plus 1, 1, which is the J to this state. And intuitively, so the first operator would force like the first two qubits to be both in 0 and 1 or 1. And like the third operator, XXX, would force the coefficients to be the same. So that's how you like find out these state. Okay, so another example, which is also very famous in this poly stable formalism, is a toy code. So since later we will consider some example that I defined a honeycomb lattice, so I would rather just start from here. So basically you have a honeycomb lattice, and on each edge there's a qubit. Then the toy code is defined by the following two type of stabilizers. So the first type is 6x around a placket. And another type of stabilizer is like 3z on edges that share a vertex. So this is a very interesting example of poly stabilizer codes because it's like a very, I mean, it's probably the simplest example of top, I mean, of some physical system that have topological order. And it's also a very nice quantum error correcting codes, and the code distance is like proportional to the square root of the system size. It's also like one of the candidates that experimentalists really thinking about to implement in the lab because you somehow only need to couple like nearby qubits, so that's why it's quite nice. Okay, so I think the poly stabilizers are forming them are really like very widely used throughout the development of quantum information. So like basically it's basically the main tool, or it's almost the same, I mean, as this, I mean, like it's almost equivalent to the study of quantum error correction. And since, I mean, it also in some kind of situation, it's also very useful to describe some highly entangled state, like for example, the cluster state, which are used in measurement-based quantum computation are normally described by poly stabilizers. And people also study like multipartite entanglement for poly stabilizer states. Like, so there exist this kind of graph states, I mean, for study like this kind of graph states. And also, there's also some people study like entropy inequality for poly stabilizers. And so the intuition somehow helps people to learn a bit more, I mean, for the general quantum state. And perhaps a bit more surprisingly, so it also, allows to understand like more about quantum phases. Like, for example, Hector and Benny, they have some kind of work of, related to like I mean, Hector has some work on classifying like possible faces in 2D that are described by Pauli stabilizers. And also in 3D, like in recent year, there's several proposals of codes, and they are also thought as like new faces in 3D, etc. So, but I mean, one thing I want to say is I think many of these tasks, many of these things really benefits from the fact that the fact that the Pauli stabilizer formalism is really is a very like efficient formalism in the sense that if someone just gives you a set of stabilizers, you can always like find out the state, or you can compute like most properties like efficiently. So I think this helps a lot when you want to study these tasks. So what we want to do is we want to try to like generalize the formalism, but also at the same time we try to keep everything efficient. And if we can achieve this, then you can basically you can study these problems, but for a larger class of state, which we think is quite nice. So, I mean, this is like the motivation of our work. Okay, so our generalization is quite, it's quite similar to the Pauli stabilizer formula. So what we do is on a single qubit, we consider a large group basically. So here on a single qubit, we consider the group generated by alpha x and s, where alpha is the square root of I, and s is a diagonal matrix, which is one and I. So, and then on n qubit, you can also still consider tensor product of these single qubit operators. And one thing that we want to note is that x and s, they neither commute nor anti-commute with each other. And this is quite different from the case of Pauli stabilizers. And this has the effect that like to study this class, somehow we need a bit different techniques. And then, I mean, the definition of stabilized states is the same. So you are again given a set of operator from the Pauli S group. And if some state is in the common, if there's a unique state that is in the common plus one eigenspace of all these operators, you call this a state, excess stabilized state. And if it's not unique, you say it's a code. Okay. So I'll just say a few things about this formalism, and so that you know what to expect during the talk. So first, you might wondering whether this is a strictly like larger class compared to Pauli stabilizer formalism. So the answer is actually is yes. And we justify this by two perspectives. So first is if you just look at like topological phase on 2D, with our generalization, we can describe like more topological phases. And also from a pure quantum information point of view, you can consider like something like LU equivalence, which is like you would say two state is LU equivalent if you can map one state to another by a tensor product of single qubit unitaries. And in our like stabilized formalism, there exists state such that that is not LU equivalent to any Pauli stabilized state. So from this kind of point of view, you can also say our class is strictly larger. Okay, so on the other hand, we can also show that the entanglement properties of our state are very, very similar to Pauli stabilizers. And this, I think, poses a quite strong like restriction on how much state you can have. So yeah, I think it's not a much larger class, so to say. And in the end, the question I asked in the beginning, so would everything be efficient? So unfortunately, so in general, if someone just give you a set of operator and ask you whether there's a state stabilized by it or not, it becomes NP complete already. But then what we do is we try to look at a restricted class where almost everything is efficient. So this is like, what you should expect from the talk. So before we go to the technical detail, let's look at like two concrete examples. So the first example is on 6-qubit. You have these three stabilizers. With some work, you can show the state stabilized by these things are this state, where x1, x2, x3 are just a single bit. And these three qubits these three things are the parity of x1, x2, and x2, x3, x3, x1, respectively. And you sum over all possible choice of x1, x2, x3. OK, so based on the knowledge of polystable by the formalism, we know that this kind of phase cannot appear in polystable formalism, which means this state cannot be stabilized by poly operators, uniquely stabilized by poly operators. But we can also show that this state is not equivalent to any polystable states, even with single qubit basis change, which means it's like, it's quite like fundamentally different. Another example is coming from this kind of topological phase. So there's one model inside of the Levin-Wen model, which is called the double semion. So it's also, again, defined on honeycomb lattice, as I showed you in the first few slides. So this model, like you have also have two types of stabilizer. One is the same as toricode, which is three set operator. But another type of stabilizer is look like this. So it's 6s, but also with 6s on the outgoing edges of the, on the placket. And we know that this model supports different anions compared to toricode. Okay, so now let's look at, the computational complexity question I asked. So what we show is if you are just given a set of operators chosen from this poly S group, and you ask whether there is a state stabilized by G, okay, so this question is NP complete, which means if you are not familiar with this kind of terminology, which means this is a very hard problem.
So is this for generic gates T or for gates in your?
Yeah, it's for picked from this poly S group, which is generated by like on single qubit excess and some coefficients. So it's.
How do you prove that it's NP complete?
It's quite simple. So. It's almost quite direct. So. We just need to look at some subclass of these kind of stabilizers. Where each of them has this kind of form. So it's i to the 3. And a product of 3s on different qubits. Then since everything here is diagonal, then the question of whether there exists a state stabilized by all g is equivalent to ask whether there's a computational basis x that is stabilized by all these these generators. And if you look at this equation, you use this form, it's exactly as asking only one of these three bits to be one. And since you can have like multiple number of these constraints, you can also have like multiple number of constraints here. And this is exactly the definition of the Wien three set problem, and it is known to be NP complete. So, this is how we show that this kind of excess stabilized problem is harder than some kind of NP complete problem. Because if you can solve this kind of excess stabilized problem, then you can also answer these kind of NP complete problem. So that's the reasoning. Okay, so as I said, we will try to consider a restricted class, and hopefully everything become efficient. So, and we also hope that we can capture some kind of essence of these excess stabilizers. So we just note that, I mean, the hardness of the problem I just stated somehow comes from those diagonal operators that contains S. Okay, so the restriction we make is kind of uncreative. So we just simply don't allow this kind of situation. So we don't allow all the diagonal operators in our group that has S, so to say. So, I mean, or more formally, we just define an excess, a regular excess stabilized group G, if all the diagonal subgroup of G can be generated by Z-type operators. And this is basically equivalent as saying this. So, yeah. And then we can show that for this restricted class, basically if a stabilized group G is regular, then we can always find the stabilized states efficiently, and even more, almost all properties of the stabilized states can be computed efficiently, like entanglement entropy or local observables. Okay, so to have a more concrete feeling of how a regular stabilizer look like, so again, this is a 6-qubit example I mentioned in the beginning. And if you look at the group generated by G1, G2, G3, the diagonal subgroup is the following. So it's basically the square of each operators. And since they don't involve any S, you know this G is regular. So this is a concrete example of this kind of the definition of regular stabilizers. Okay, so we want to talk a bit about how we justify of using this kind of restriction, because it sounds like a very huge restriction. So first, I would say there's a lot of example of excess stabilizers are regular. So for example, the 6-qubit example, I mean, it's regular. And with some work, you can also check the double semion also gives you a regular excess stabilizer group. Also, we can show that if someone just gives you an unregular stabilized group G, for example, if it's degenerate, then it's always possible to find a set of bases, so that each of them can be uniquely stabilized by a regular group, a stabilized group, G1 to GK. This means that if you can study the property of regular excess stabilized states, then even if someone just gave you an unregular group, you still know that each of the bases would satisfy those properties you have known. So that's how we justify that we are basically mainly focused on those regular group G, so to say. And the last point is that if someone just give you a stabilized group G, you can always just check whether it's regular or not efficiently yourself. So you wouldn't run into any kind of problem, basically. Okay, so now I want to talk a bit about the basic mechanism of our stabilized formula. So how we find a state or how roughly is everything. But so I would say that for this part, it would be a bit vague. I just hope I can give you some intuition, basically. So the thing is, in poly stabilizers, the efficiency of a lot of things are coming from the fact that all the stabilizers either commute or anti-commute, so that you would know that. So first, to stabilize anything, you would need everything to be commuting, and also you just need to check whether minus I is inside of the group or not. So somehow everything is kind of simple because things commute basically. But this is no longer true in XS stabilizer, as I told you that X operator and S operator neither commute or anti-commute with each other. So what we do is we kind of study the relation between the stabilizers, stabilizer operators, and the state expansion directly. So here, the state expansion is something like this. So V would be some affine space, and Fx would be some kind of coefficients. And this is, I would say, it's kind of like a quantum work on a vector space. And I hope you can get what I mean in the next few slides. Okay, so to explain the idea, I would just look at this very, very simple polystabilizer states. So states is like following, and you sum over x1, x2. And we know that the stabilizer for this state is the following two stabilizers. So there's some standard way to go from here to here. But there's another way, which is, for example, you just start from 0, 0. Then you can apply one of the operators zx to go to 0, 1. And you can also apply another operator to, I mean, xz to go to 1, 0. Again, you can go from 0, 1. You can apply xz to 0, 1 to go to -1, 1, and zx on 1, 0. Also, I mean, you would go to the same thing. And the thing is, if you combine these four things, like 0, 0 plus 0, 1 plus 1, 0 minus 1, 1, you would exactly get this quantum state. So, I mean, so this is what I say as some kind of quantum work on vector space. So a bit more formally, so you can look at this procedure from the fact that like for each polystabilizer, you can write down the corresponding, let's say G1 is X tensor Z, G2 is Z tensors X. So for each of these stabilizers, you can write down the corresponding projector to the +1 eigenspace. So for the first one, it's 1 plus G1. And the signal is, I mean, you would get some kind of normalization factor, which I would ignore here. And this, since these things commute, this would be the total projector into the code space or the state. And since you know that the 0, 0 state has a non-zero overlap with your stabilized states, you can just apply this projector on this basis. And then again, since everything commute, in the end you would get four terms, which is like this, acton 0, 0. And this is exactly like corresponding to four of these things here. So yeah, this is like the reason behind this kind of mechanism. And what I want to say is, you can compute the state for XS stabilizers basically by using the same kind of way. So you just start to apply these XS operators on some computational basis, and you try to go through the whole vector space. But one kind of difference between like XS stabilizer and polystabilizer is the following. So in polystabilizers, so you would only like, apart from X, there's only like Z basically. And when you apply that on some qubit, which is a parity of like x1 and x2, you would get something like this. So it's minus 1 to the x1 plus x2, which is the same thing. But if you apply S, which exists in XS stabilizer, on these kind of qubit, you would get like I to the x1 plus x2, but also a nonlinear term here on the exponent of minus 1. And this would essentially lead to the fact that, so in Pauli stabilizers, in the end, we know that all Pauli stabilizers would have this kind of form, where V is some affine space and the coefficients would be look like this, where Lx is some linear function of x. So for example, it can be like, if you write x as a string x1 to xn, here Lx would just be some linear function like x1 plus x2 plus x4, this kind of thing. And Qx would be some like quadratic polynomial of these variables. For example, I mean, here x1, x2 would just be, for example, like x1, x2 would quantify some kind of quadratic function here. And even more, that we know that in Pauli stabilizer formula, all these functions, all linear function and quadratic function are allowed. So if someone just randomly write out any linear function and quadratic function here, you would know that it can be stabilized by some Pauli stabilizers. And in XS stabilizers formalism, for XS stabilized state, since there's this kind of difference here, you would obtain a large class of coefficients where CX is like the, it's like the polynomial of with order 3. So basically you would get a bit more than Pauli stabilized formula. But what I want to say is not all possible LX, QX, CX are allowed in XS stabilized formula. So they have to satisfy some relation with the affine space V here. And the whole procedure is somehow like the following. So you would start with some stabilizers, whether someone gave it to you or you try to construct something. And then from a stabilizer, you can get to the affine space V and Fx. And if these things are regular, you can find these both of these things efficiently. And then from these, by definition, the state is the following. So if you know this, you also know the stabilizer state. And from the form here, you can also know efficiently know that the quantum circuit to generate the state. And by some other ways, you can also compute the local observables for this kind of state. And assume the, if the stabilizers describe some kind of subspace, which means there's multiple of this kind of state, and if you can know the form of all these like state, then in principle, you can also find operators that maps state between, you can also map state to each other. And this is kind of like logical operator, I would say. And there's another thing, which is we can show that for XS stabilizers, we can show there's a relation between Fx and V, as I said before. And the relation is kind of non-trivial, and it would actually lead a way to let you efficiently compute the entanglement for these kind of state. More concretely, so given a regular XS stabilizer state psi and any bipartition A and B, we can always like efficiently find a tensor product of unitary on A and B, which is like UA tensors UB, such that this unitary would map the excess stabilized state to a Pauli stabilized state. And this fact has the following like consequences. So first, you would know that the reduced density matrix of this excess stabilized state would always be like a projector because this is a case for policy state by states. And since we have like efficient ways to compute entanglement for policy state by states, we also know that we would have an efficient way to compute the von Neumann entropy or Rengi entropy for any bipartition for excess state by states. But somehow, what we don't know is, so here for any bipartition, you can always like map the state to a policy state by states. But what we don't know is whether for all the bipartition, we can always map the state to a single policy state by states. So like it's possible that for one bipartition, you would map the your excess state by states to a policy state by the states like Psi A, you know, to Psi 1. And for another bipartition, you would map it to like policy state by states Psi 2. I mean, somehow we cannot rule out this kind of possibility, so to say. Okay, so I would just do a very short summary for what I have said so far. So in the beginning, we define this kind of poly S group. So it's generated by these single qubit operators. And in general, to find the state by states is something NP complete, which means it's hard. And then we define a regular group, which is those stabilized group G that don't contain S in the diagonal subgroup. And then we know that if the stabilized group G is regular, then the state and the most properties of the stabilized states can be computed efficiently. And we know the state are of this kind of form. Also, if the stabilized group G is non-regular, we can still find a set of regular excess stabilized states that form a basis for the subspace stabilized by the non-regular group G. So yeah, this is a summary so far. So then I would say a few things about the so-called twisted quantum double model. So the reason I would tell you something here, I mean, I want to tell you something about twisted double model here is because with our stabilizers, we can somehow describe this class of model. So let's go back to like toric code. So as I said, it's defined by these two type of operator, but there's another like more graphical way to understand the state. So you can say an edge is occupied when it's in computational basis one. And then the ground state, which is a superposition of X in some V, is basically a linear. I mean, the V here would just be the linear subspace of all closed loops. So for example, I mean, assume this, I mean, this is like abstract like picture, but like assume, but here is like one situation that everything is like closed. So when there's a line here, it means like the corresponding qubits is in one. And then this kind of thing is what I mean by closed loops. And in the end, the ground state of toric code would just be a superposition of all possible closed loops. And the double semion model is, I mean, like in this kind of language, it can be understanding as following. So up to some local basis change, the double semion state can also be written like this, where V again is like all possible configuration of closed loops, but you would get some coefficients before each computational basis. And the fx here is exactly the number of loops of the configuration x. So for example, if x can be represented by this graph, then the number of loops is basically 5. So here, before the basis x, you would get a -1 coefficient. So the double semion model can be somehow understanding this way. Okay, so then you can look at something a bit more crazy. So For example, you can look at three layers of honeycomb lattice. And again, you can consider V, the linear subspace V, linear subspace V, to be the linear subspace of closed loops on three layers. So you require that on each layer, all these things forms like closed loops. On each layer, somehow everything is closed. And people know that there exist interesting like effects that this kind of state or subspace, it depends on what kind of manifold you put your lattice on. So people know some kind of interesting effects that has local Hamiltonians. And the tool people construct this is by using like group cohomology, this kind of thing. And what we want to say is this kind of state can be described by excess stabilizers. There's some small thing you need to do is you need to like introduce some ancillary qubits, and also with some like local unitary operators that act locally, which means that this don't really map the, like, I mean, with this kind of operation, you still know that you stay in the same phase, so to say. And the way we show this is, as I told you before, so if you have some excess stabilizer formula, if you have some excess stabilizers, you would have some vector space V and some coefficients Fx. But then there would be a relation between V and Fx. So here what we do is we just check for those like twisted double model, the coefficients and the linear subspace satisfy this kind of condition. So this is how we show that with excess stabilizers we can describe this topological model. And there's some like interesting cases inside these twisted double model. So like when you have three layers of Z2, there is some twisted model that has like degeneracy 22 on a torus, while others have like 64, which is, for example, the case if you have three independent Tory code. And people know that those model have degeneracy 22 that they support like non-abelian anions, and this kind of thing also like reflects on the excess stabilizer. So assume you put the excess stabilizer group, on corresponding to the model has degeneracy 22 on a torus, you would end up with a non-regular excess stabilizer group. Whereas if you just put, for example, double semion on a torus, you would get something regular. So somehow the fact that whether you get non-abelian or more like abelian anion somehow reflects in the fact that whether you get regular or non-regular excess stabilizer group G. Also, maybe just one more sentence. So people know that, for example, in 2D, if you just have polystabilizers, then based on some assumption that you would know that you can only support like abelian anions, and basically it's always a core base of Tory code. So the fact that with excess, you stabilize some model that support non-abelian anions means that, you're describing like more models compared to like Tory code. Okay, so maybe just one more thing in the end, before the end. So as I told you, so in general, these stabilizers, they can be neither like commuting or anti-commuting. But it's actually possible to, okay, so for example, I mean, but when you want to consider Hamiltonian, like there's a straightforward way to find a non-commutative Hamiltonian, which is you just put in also the Hermitian conjugation. But it's actually possible to, for the ground space, you find a commuting parent Hamiltonian. The trick is you just project each DJ, I mean these stabilizers, into the subspace stabilized by the diagonal subgroup of G. And the fact that the ground space has a commuting parent Hamiltonian would have the consequences that, like, all those properties holds for commuting projectors also applies to our stabilizer codes or subspace. So for example, people know that with commuting projectors, you can always find like string-like operators in 2D. And this kind of property would also hold for all stabilizers. So I would just give you like two examples of how the, I mean, two examples of how these kind of commuting Hamiltonian thing works. So for the double semion, I mean, like people, I mean, they're already existing like commuting parent Hamiltonian, and it's exactly you just project each stabilizer into the gauge invariant subspace. And another very concrete, like four qubit example is the following. So you can consider two stabilizers, which are XXSS and SSXX. And the diagonal subgroup would be generated by these two things. And essentially, they force the first two qubit to be in 0, 0 or 1, 1, and the third and the fourth qubit to be in 0, 0 or 1, 1. And then you just, since we want to, in the end, we would project these things into the subspace stabilized by these things. So we would just label like 0, 0 by 0 bar and 1, 1 by 1 bar and 1, 1 tilde, okay. And then if you just look at this subspace, these stabilizers are essentially just XZ and ZX. And you basically just obtain something commuting. So, and then yeah, they're actually also Hermitian. So this is how you basically get a commuting parent Hamiltonian from the stabilizers. Okay, so here's the summary. So during this talk, I mean, I told you a generalization of polystabilized formalism. And in many examples, also an efficient way to compute the states and the properties. And I show you that this stabilized formalism describe a larger class of states and also physical models. And also maybe some open questions. So first I don't think we really think, we basically don't think anything about error correcting codes, but it's, I think, one of the most natural thing to think about for this kind of formalism. And also, what I hope we can get is, so far, as I said, we study the property, the thing we do is we just look at the stabilizer and the expansion of the state. But we don't really use much, from the group structure. Like in polystabilizers, the fact that it's a group is quite important. So many, like entanglement or this kind of thing can be directly obtained from look at the properties of the group. But in our case, somehow, I don't think we really make use, of the group structure we have. Also, as I said, there's something about entanglement we don't know. Like, for example, is it possible that, for example, you look at all bipartition and you compute all entropy and you can know, at least in some case, you can tell it's an excess stabilizer states rather than a polystabilizer states. Also, we are hoping that we can obtain some kind of condition that even when a stabilizer group are non-regular, like in some kind of cases, we can still like efficiently compute the state and the properties. Thanks.
Choice of using S is almost a bit arbitrary. I would consider just using some a completely different finite group.
Yeah, I mean, so in general, I think there's infinitely way to generalize this kind of thing. But I think, I think we just look at a particular example. I mean, I agree. So there's many possibility to generate it, I mean, generalize the polystable formula in different ways. So. But it's very hard to say. It's very hard to say, like, yeah, I don't know. So I don't know. Also, from this perspective, there's also other, like, existing, like, generalization of polystable states, especially like on the state part. Like there's people study like hypergraph state, also there's something so-called LME state, but it's not really that much, I mean, it's not really widely used somehow.
Are there more questions?
Can you explain why it becomes easy to find the
So the thing is, like in this whole thing, the only part that is somehow really hard is basically you try to get the stabilizers to the affine space V. And in the case that it's non-regular, I mean, so basically the V has some, is partially decided by the diagonal subgroup of the stabilizers. And in the case that the stabilizers are regular, and then the diagonal subgroups are regular means that it's only set type operator. And when you're trying to find V, you just need to solve like linear equation over set two. And when it contains S, somehow it becomes, you need to solve something modulo four and the variable is only zero or one, somehow that's why things becomes a bit harder if the in the diagonal subgroups there's S, so to say.
So you don't want to have S, but a product of S could be fine.
So in general, it's hard to say. Like the NP complete example is there's like a product of S somehow. I mean. So in general, it's very hard to say. I mean, maybe if you restrict
an even product of S, or
yeah. Maybe there's some kind of restriction that makes things efficient. But as I said, that's one of the things that we are also looking a bit at.
If there are no further questions, then let's thank Shashank again.